serenity tree that you never want your mind to leave. And finally, I found somebody who fit perfectly. You're everything that I dreamed you'd be. And I'll be what you need, cause I'm playing for keeps, baby. Let it out slowly, please. If it's a dream, don't pinch me, baby. Could you let me sleep? As long as I see your face, I don't want to be awake. I count sheep forever if you promise me. You're never changing. Your love remains the same no matter what the day may bring. I'm here to stay, whatever comes.
Good afternoon, everyone. You are with Kareem Ali from the National Coalition of Women of Color in Construction, and I am your host for this afternoon. We would like to talk about how the power of changing the game. I also want to let you know that we are airing live from Stone Mountain, Georgia, and we are today is December 12th. So officially we have approximately one real business week left in the new year. And the topic for today is the power of changing the game. And I wanted to kind of go over the issues in which are prevalent today. Had a lot of calls from all over the country inquiring about the coalition and about some of the points that we might be able to deliver to the community. And I wanted to stress to folks that our mission is focusing on accelerating the growth of women of color in the contracting and construction industry, from startup to existing businesses, by advocacy, social capital, succession planning, education, sustainability strategies, and technical assistance. Now, I think it's very important that this becomes an archive level of understanding what the coalition stands for and why it is so important that other associations who go on and listen to the show contact us, because we've had a series of different events to happen right under our noses in at least in the last 6 or 8 months. It's been discovered that based on not being able to be transparent about different policies that affect us, we are the last to know about things, and we are being pretty much raped across the board by utilizing federal dollars on projects that the states and the federal government, the Bush administration, has hidden about $140 billion in contracting dollars that went to men who were CEOs of companies that weren't even supposed to get the contracts. So therefore, in 2006 and 2007, only all women, color or whatever ethnicity there is, only received $5 billion of $340 billion worth of contracting dollars. And this was posted by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, U.S. Women's Chamber of Commerce, with the CEO, Mrs. Dordiff, who is a member partner of the PWC out of New York, and this is a part of our website, a news alert. Also want to mention of our proud partners, associations, groups, and businesses that share a common desire to improve the business environments for women of color who have changed the way they've done business, and NCWCC is leading the charge for change while maintaining integrity of its mission, which I just read. We have joined forces with the Women of Color Network out of Pennsylvania. They are a national advocacy through action. Their mission is to provide and enhance leadership capacity and resources that promote the activities of women of color, advocates, and activists within the United States and U.S. territories to address the elimination of violence against women and families within the sovereign nations, the United States and U.S. territories, to address the elimination of violence against women and their families. This group was started in 1997. A group of women of color across the country gathered to establish an entity to address the unique challenges facing women of color advocates and activities within the violence against women movement. Since that time, the Women of Color Network has created a national medium where women of color can dialogue, network, and organize and obtain resources to support their efforts. I think that is very important that we, as business folks and as women and people of color, understand that this is something that's prevalent into our communities. We also, back a few weeks ago, had Lauren Sugarman from Chicago Women of Trades. They're part of our new inner circle group. And the Chicago Women of Trades is celebrating over 25 years of supporting and encouraging and training women in high-skilled, high-wage, non-traditional careers. Originally, they were established by tradeswomen as a support network. But the Chicago Women of Trades addresses all barriers that prohibit women and girls from entering and succeeding in male-dominated industries by creating opportunities and promoting equality, workplaces, and conditions. So, and then our next folks that we have partnered with is Professional Women in Construction, located in New York. They are a 501c nonprofit company. They're a 501c nonprofit company organization that's committed to advancing professional entrepreneur and manager opportunities for women and other non-traditional populations in construction and related industries. They have five chapters, over 1,000 members, and they have a constituency of 10,000 representing a broad spectrum of the industry. So I wanted to read that out to you all. Please go to our site at ncwcc.org and look at some of the things that we are trying to accomplish on behalf of women, and to provide different vehicles for you guys. I want to welcome the callers to the show. Have a caller from 404-299. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Great. Caller from 219-938.
Hi, how's everyone?
Okay. Caller from 770-962.
Good afternoon.
Okay, and caller from 651.
Yes.
All right. Everybody, welcome to the show. I wanted to make sure that we stressed some of the points that have been made. We also wanted to share with everyone that our organization hopefully will be not one of, but one of many who have struck up a deal with the Carpenters Local, the Carpenter, not just the local, but the Carpenter Trades Organization in the southern states, so that we can provide workforce development for the women who want to go into pure construction and not have a workforce that could sustain them on projects that we may not have actual direct experience in working. So, therefore, we've launched a campaign in being able to support women in contracting and doing so. So that is something that is concrete, and we're able to work in with collaborative partners. This means that we now have access to all the contractors that are signatory subs and their suppliers that are signatory inside the local. And there's a huge amount. You're talking about 80,000 folks strong throughout the whole United States. So that is a network that we've tied into, and they have changed the way that they have received the way, you know, that they receive women of businesses. Now we have partnered with them. They see that we are a strategic alliance force to be reckoned with. Caller from 404-299.
Yes, good afternoon, Miss Ali.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Hello, this is Leroy Tyler.
Okay, Mr. Tyler, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Okay, great.
Yes, I just wanted to call to lend my support to the effort that you're doing. Being a formerly with the Atlanta Black Pages, we met a number of minority businesses and women-owned businesses that were doing remarkable things in the metro Atlanta community. And I think the theme or the topic for this evening's meeting is dealing with change.
Power of changing the game.
The game needs to be changed. I want to make this statement, then I'll get off. As I'm seeing the similarities that were put out there with what you're doing and what minority businesses have always done, and even with President-elect Obama, I'm looking at the similarity when you look at the Tuskegee Airmen, when they were told they could not, they did not have the intellect, they did not have the ability, so on and so forth, and then they went over and they overperformed. And basically, what needs to be recognized on the part of a lot of us, our own community, as well as communities at large, is that you all have the ability to do things that once you have the opportunity, you will perform and most times overperform when given the opportunity, because the ability to do it is there. So that's why I wanted to talk about the need for change, put it out there on the table for the rest of the callers to talk about, and how we can initiate that going into the year 2009.
Okay, welcome, caller from 251.
Hi, this is Mariel.
Hi.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you.
And caller from 770-306.
That's me.
That's Mariel.
Okay.
251.
Okay, caller from 251-479.
Yes, how are you?
Wonderful.
Great. I'm just listening. I just turned in, so I just want to get an idea what the topic is all about.
The topic of the day is the power of changing the game, the power of women of color in contracting, if we would only fight for a cause of action that focuses on policy changes, redefining what we need our policymakers in Washington to do for us, because that is the that's been the emphasis I thank Mr. Leroy there to open up this forum for us, because we need to know what to do, but we do understand what to do. Research has been defined by data that states that one of the things that we must do is create social networks, and this is what the existence of this coalition's Blog Talk Radio that we do at each Wednesday is, to have a forum and a static footprint that defines our existence. Because what we understand is that if you cannot be measured, you do not exist. So therefore, we now have a measuring tool. This is just one of those measuring tools of our existence. And another part of our existence is those folks that we are part of inner circle networks that partner up with us for different reasons. Typically, it is for the same purpose that everybody that's online. Like Nicole, to kind of respond to the gentleman. Nicole is from Giovanna Constructors, located in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, I'm sorry. In responding to him about addressing the need for change, I'm sorry. What particular aspect of it? I'm sorry, Karima.
Okay, what he was saying was that. Go ahead, Mr. Leroy.
Well, the need for change, basically we looked at change that happened within the mind and the psyche of America at large, where they saw that it's possible for a black man to have the capabilities to be able to be the president of the United States. Okay, that's massive change. But the thing that I'm looking at in terms of change per se is, like Ms. Ali said, that it's basically it's going to lie within us excuse me, because there is the ability for us to change our circumstances by the way that we circulate our dollars amongst ourselves that can have a major, massive impact on business within our community that impacts how we move up economically as a group together.
Okay. And Muriel is online. Muriel is an attorney, and also she has a woman that owns a locksmith company that she started off about 20 years ago, right, Muriel?
Yes.
Okay. Supporting the economic impact of our community, we understand what our dollars are. Would you like to kind of jump in on that conversation?
Well, I think my view is it may be a little different. I think it's important that we work together as a race of people. But I think more importantly is that we shouldn't limit ourselves just to that. It should be not by race, but by everyone to come together and work together. And somehow we got to find a way that we ourselves stop looking at ourselves as just a race of black people, you know, more so as a human race of people, and we find out where we fit in that, so we can bridge our way. And that's pretty much my view.
Okay. Like to kind of, I think what we've been. What I've been out doing is creating an economic force for the coalition and meeting with several organizations throughout the country. I think I agree with you because even though we are women of color, the organization has sustainability. I think we should be able to sustain ourselves as business owners, as individuals, as you said, and our economic levels cannot be exercised unless there's a measuring tool for that. So I think when we talked about and when we created the power of changing the game, I think that's one thing that stresses that, yes, the economic measuring stick has to be there. I agree with that. And, Mary, I do agree with the fact that color can no longer be a basis of an existence of a people. And I think that what we've done is that as Barack Obama, that is going to be our president, he put some things together, and if you guys go to the site, one thing that he did was he implemented a social network of individuals, and then that created the human network of individuals, and so therefore that created a financial capital network of individuals. So I think he started from a grassroots standpoint and had a lot of resolve in defining how to select those individuals who would lead, like Mr. Leroy said, Mr. Reed says. You have to find folks who are willing to lead and lead without any, any compensation level of thinking that they should, you know. Some people are charged to do certain things. And, Mr. Reed, you owned the Black Pages for several years here in Metro Atlanta, right?
Yeah, that's my partner, Ken Reed. I'm Leroy Tyler.
Oh, Mr. Tyler.
For several years we did. And when you're talking about change, there's something that we were going to do that we were formulating, and basically it holds true even now. We're going to put together a national campaign to network with all the other Black Pages in the country and even outside the country concerning a program or a campaign to redirect the way we spend our dollars with each other. We found in a survey that for every dollar we spend in the Black community, we create $2.2 in economic activity in that community. And for every $1 million we spend, we create 10 jobs. So back in about 2003, 2004, we saw that the Black community had about $20 billion in Metro Atlanta that we spend annually. And if we were to increase by 5% how much money we spent with each other, we could have generated, with the multiplier effect I just mentioned in economics, we could generate $2.2 billion cash flow coming into the Black community and create 10,000 jobs just by increasing the amount of money that we spend with each other by 5%. We only spend about 5% of our dollar with each other anyway. So we spend another 5%, which is actually 10% total. That's the type of economic impact it would have had on the black community in Metro Atlanta if we were to do that. And that includes businesses. That includes businesses such as yourself who were involved in the construction era or construction trade. And that's across the board. And these are not jobs we're not talking about that's McDonald's level. We're talking about career jobs that could be generated in the black community. And one economics professor at UGA told me, he said, the black community, if you were to do that, it wouldn't matter what happened with the rest of the state or the rest of the country. And also, you could be a job producer for other ethnic groups that want to come and interact with the community. So that's what we're looking at in terms of change. If we do that, we can do this ourselves without waiting for anybody to do anything in Washington.
And that's a great campaign to launch. I think that also would incur, that would also entail folks having the knowledge of that. And I think what's happening is that I call it the awakening.
Yes.
I call it the awakening. I think Nicole and I were talking about a lot of things that we don't know even as business owners. And just to sustain our businesses and know that, you know, one thing I told Nicole, I said you have to look at that you are the economic impulse. We have to discern against who we are as business owners, as women of color, and as individuals ourselves. We have to understand our true purpose and our true power. And this is what these next last two shows are going to be about, is the empowerment of individuals. And this is a self situation. This is a consciousness that was raised through. Now we have a higher consciousness because we do have a focus point, which is Barack Obama, to understand that, you know, he raised more money than any in history, based on $5, $2, $10. You know, yeah, there were some large contributions from different groups, but the grassroots of those money came from poor working or you know, socially economic individuals that were low income that launched this campaign. So that is a perfect example of us taking our power, the power of understanding that we can change the game, and that's how we change the game, is that economic stimulation understanding that we can stimulate, or we can also be. I think if people start to research something, is that when what they've been doing for years, and I just have to say this, they have been luring us as people to rape the black dollar and take it out of the community, eliminate our jobs, eliminate the way that we can make our income. And people did not understand that is a trickle-down effect. When we stop spending money, then the rest of the world really suffers. And that's all color people all over the world, because it's not just, you know, Americans or, you know, black folks that are from America that are black. There are folks from all over the world that are black, French, you know. I mean, everybody. I mean, black folks are everywhere. And I think us understanding that type of campaign would be strategic on every level. I think if we could do even something like that in contracting, one of the things that we're looking at is launching a campaign called TRIM, which is basically it's transparency in terms of the dollars that are out there, transparency of funds, reform of policies, information to transform, and measuring growth and sustainability. And that's TRIM. TRIM would provide one of the things that Barack Obama was saying at Meet the Press is sustainability. And that is one way to is to empower that sustainability is through that type of transformation. You know, Muriel, you mentioned we had a conversation when we were at the SCORE thing there, and we talked about how a lot of the bankers, as a matter of fact, it was on that Thursday, we were talking about the program structures and programs that continue to just, you know, you guys go to different programs, you know, and everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody, you know, everybody's, it's a networking event, but it's nothing that is going to bring sustainability to your business.
Right.
And one of the things that I wanted to maybe put out there in the atmosphere was that even with that understanding about the economic dollar, you know, we had that blackout low situation. But even with the programs that you've been going to, we have been seeing the same model, and it's getting the same results. I got a call from a lady from out of Maryland, And she said the women business owner there are just nervous because they don't understand how to, nobody's given them the model to become the change. Nobody understands what to do next in the 21st century because everything has died in front of everybody. You know, you guys go to a lot of meetings for networking possibilities, but bottom line, everybody's looking for, what do you look for when you go into these type of programs that you sign up for
well,
and that you're not getting?
Well, I think what I'm looking for pretty much is just trying to educate myself. I don't know if I really expect these programs that's pretty much sponsored by the government to be something that's really going to, in the long run, that one program is going to benefit me. So if I can go to several, I can educate myself, hopefully, enough to be able to do what I need to do to sustain our business. But what I think is missing is that most of these folks who work in the capacities that they do with these seminars, most of these people are employees. They don't have a clue what it takes to be an employer. I mean, they don't understand what it takes to manage, to maintain a business. So I think until they get, and the score people that they have there, the same thing with them. Most of these people had a business before, but we're talking about you having an ongoing business and you're trying to maintain it. How can someone who hasn't done that over a long period of time help me, you know, realistically, to maintain my business? All their programs are geared towards something that's in the public eye for them is going to make them stand out to appear as if they're doing something to help. But the bottom line is that this is like a self-help program. We got to find a way to do it for ourselves. That's what I believe.
Yeah, I personally think there are some benefits to going to some of those meetings, though, because I know a lot of the ones sponsored by GDOT and by the Economic Alliance, the benefit to a company to me, especially a small company like my own, is that a lot of time at those meetings they will give out schedules and let you know maybe 6 months ahead of time that a particular job is coming out or that they're going to release a job and it is coming out a particular quarter, and you can kind of prepare yourself and kind of strategize to be able to go after the players who are going to be bidding on that job. I think there are some benefits because, I mean, the main reason I go is to get leads to getting additional contracts. And I think it's about what you, if you have a target and you have a goal and you go there with that purpose, that's what you're looking for. Anything that kind of falls within that goal, that's what you're going to jump on. And so some of them have actually been a benefit to my company.
Well, I can honestly say that I'm very ecstatic about the fact that I ask everybody to always go back to the site because basically we have strategically aligned ourselves up with identifying the programs that do not work. According to the research from the Center of Women Business Research for Women of Color, which has been, it's the current research that was released. It took 3 years to compile. And this, you know, they're a very reputable firm organization that I call the top Fortune 500 companies solicited for services. The center was the first and still the only organization to provide regularly updated projections on numbers and growth and economic contribution of women-owned businesses. And this is what we have to do. I kind of agree with everybody that's on the call, but we have to be able to singularize ourselves for one purpose, and that purpose is that our economic impact has to be measured due to the fact that we are not counted. You know, and when we say we're not counted, they know we exist, but you still have people feel like they look at a black woman and, oh, she's on welfare, or she doesn't know what she's doing, or even if she is on her own business, you know, there's a lot of discriminatory thinking inside a person's mind. So even when you go to those meetings, Nicole, I'm sure that you probably can't imagine what people are thinking, but you have to sell, you know, that's a selling point. But there's a breakdown in the intellectual thinking of the individuals that are that you're presenting yourself to. And you've done
Of course. I mean, we know that the playing ground is not. I mean, it's definitely not a level playing ground that we're playing on. But and I do agree. I mean, that's got to change with the whole idea in the whole view that people have of us. I think we can, as individual and as a whole, we can change that perception of ourselves by our ability to do a turnkey job and take every job from, you know, do a good job and set that example for future contractors coming behind us. So I think we play a part in that too. Even I know people's mindset is going to be hard to change that, but I think, you know, that's what this coalition is about trying to, you know, get the word out there and educate people that there are companies out here who are capable of taking care of a job and doing it, you know, from the beginning to the end, to take care of the whole turnkey for a job.
I think the more that we meet and talk about different things straight across the board, the bottom line is the issue of financial economic levels of being counted. And I really appreciate our caller to bring that on the table. The way that we had something like that in Milwaukee, sir, where somebody was able to do some data on research on how the black dollar actually circulated into the black community, as you want to say, the urban communities within itself. And even in contracting, a lot of us try to contract with each other. And we try to work with each other, but there are just so many different barriers that that folks face. This is something from one of the research participants. They said some certified companies don't reach out to others. They feel that they feel like they got there on their own and they don't need you. So it, you know, they, you know, there's a lot of levels of obstacles that stand in the way of even trying to launch a campaign or trying to build your business. You know, there's community assumption that I don't know how to run my business, conduct business as a woman of color. I have had to prove that we're just as good as anyone else. What I'm doing is just reading you actually the quotes that came out of the research. They said minorities in positions of power are male, not just Southern white male, good old boy networks, but fraternity. So those are some barriers, and those are some of the obstacles that that we talk about in one sense of the word. But we have to identify, and we have to put things concrete, just like you were saying, that if you have to measure our success. Even with Barack Obama being president, it does not negate the fact that we have to continue to move. We have to move even faster with resilience to the head of the table while we have that opportunity, because a lot of folks are not going to just bend because of the fact Barack Obama is in office. You still have people playing the same game, you know, doing the same thing. You have the same folks who are getting the same contracts. You have the same folks who are identifying where those projects are 6 months to a year, and they're positioning their companies and the teams and things of nature to advance, but we're not getting the information. And one thing that was one of the barriers is lack of knowledge and information sets most of the women of color businesses up for failure, you know. This is one of the reasons, again, I have to support the fact that we exist, because I absolutely do this every day and talk with women all over the country, and they get excited. It's almost like a quick fix. They get excited and they say, oh yeah, we want to really do something. And then they go back and they look at the problem that they're facing immediately at that time, and they're not ready to move. Well, so our thing is, and this is probably ugly to say, but this is a cleansing period where folks who got something left in them, they're gonna move, and for those who don't have it in them, they're not. I mean, it doesn't matter how much you tell a person that they have worth, they have value, that they're, you know, that they're number one in their field, that they can expand. A lot of folks are afraid to continue to move, because this is a different day. This is such a new day. When January 1st comes, I believe you're going to see a lot of people, probably, hopefully, they will continue to look at the change has come, but then they have to change within themselves. That change and that power has to come within themselves, and that power of of empowering yourself, that comes within. And so that was one of the reasons why, you guys, that we continue to talk about the power of changing the game. How do we change the game? What would be one way to change our contracting industry that would significantly impact everybody at one time? Can anybody answer that?
There are ways that can be done. Basically, in terms of contractors, to what degree of contracts or what percentage of your business comes from the private sector and comes from municipalities?
You're just asking that in general?
Yes.
Nicole, can you answer that one?
For my business, it would be actually probably about 80% municipalities and the other 20%, of course, you know, on the private sector.
And Muriel, mm-hmm. What about you?
Pretty close to that also.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're not normal. We get most of our jobs at 75% private, and the other 30 was government, municipal.
Okay, so the other 30 being government. Well, so for the most part, there is the amount of jobs that are out there in terms of government jobs. With the economy going the way it is, what trend do you see happening in terms of the degree of their availability still being there? In terms of, I'm talking about overall, when you look at the number, because I'm looking at the comparison of which resource would be the largest. Of course, now government is going to be larger in terms of dollar expenditure. But in terms of the economy, the way that it's going now, what area shows the most promise in terms of, if you're going to mine it, that would give the greatest return if you got the most support or the most response from it?
It would be the government, because if the government is bailing out the rest of the country, so it would be, that's the increase of federal dollars. It's a positioning, each company that's on the phone is positioned as some form of certified or 8A firm, so the government would be the better vehicle in terms of the growth that's concerned, because the private sector slowed down when the financial sector closed down. A lot of my clients slowed because the banks weren't giving money. So the government, even with the expenditure being larger, there's still opportunity. Do you guys agree?
Well,
right.
I'm sorry.
You go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No. Okay. No, I was going to say, I think with the municipalities right now, with the budget shortfalls, I think both are pretty scary, but I think you would have a greater chance than a municipality of bouncing back and hopefully getting some assistance than from the private sector. So I think, you know, to me, it's just a matter to me of just continually diversifying. I mean, to try to jump on whatever ship is not sinking. So, I mean, you know, just really trying to just look at all your options and not just to pigeonhole yourself just in one particular one, which is, you know, it's not an easy thing right now, because like you said, I mean, when people in higher positions in these municipalities who I'm talking to, when they're sounding a little afraid about what's happening and a little unsure about the ground and what they're standing on, I mean, that's, to me, it is, you know, I was sitting down trying to forecast today for the next couple of years, and it is. It's a thing we all got to, you know, kind of sit down and kind of get strategies up on where we're going. So.
Well, the foundation of it all is the private sector. Right now, municipalities, with the economy going the way that it is, there's some unrest as to how much revenue is coming into municipalities to sustain services and to sustain things that are needed for the community to be able to function. And as that goes, as we go, the municipalities go. And I know I'm looking at it in terms of a a broader spectrum than just the municipalities in terms of one contract can be worth tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But I think that in out there and where in terms of the amount of potential that is in communities, particularly in our community, if the amount of money that is being spent in the black community is staggering. And over 20 years ago, we did a survey to show how much money we spend in Metro Atlanta. We found out over 20 years ago that black people in Metro Atlanta were spending more on fast food and casual clothing than Motown and Johnson's Publishing were going to make all year. And they spent it more in 6 months than what Motown and Johnson's Publishing were going to make all year combined. And they back then, they were number one and number two largest businesses in the entire country with the Black Enterprise Top 100. So when I'm looking at the amount of money that they were spending about over $5 billion a week just on alcohol. No, I'm sorry, just on fast food.
Yeah, that was right, alcohol, because I think I've been drunk every Sunday.
So if you're going to spend more on casual clothing than what the two largest businesses, black businesses in the country, are going to make all year, but you spend more than that in 6 months. Now,
so how do you think we've changed that mentality, though? I mean, and if that is what we're, you know, as a people are spending our money on as a class of people, how do you position yourself to keep that money, you know, within the black community? I guess that's the biggest.
There's going to be a conditioning process that needs to be done. And the thing that we saw is going to have to entail every center of influence in the black community, the church community, the educational community, civic community, everything that it touches in it, the entertainment community. All of it, we're going to have a focus, a common theme, a common purpose to see the necessity of why we need to deal with this in terms of correcting this problem amongst ourselves. No one does this in America but us. We're the only ones that spend our money the way we spend our money as it regards how we view each other.
Caller from 414, welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go a little bit deeper into that. Can you imagine taking that same theory, and that is where that is the mythology level of not just thinking in, you know, in the dollar, but can you imagine where we were, and I always have to go back to contracting, is that if we had continued to hire folks who look like us in our communities and work diligently and perform in work, you know, we've had an influx of immigrant workers who have came in and became not just the laborers in the construction industry, but they're the engineers. They own their Fortune 500 CEOs now. They came in, and one of the, you know, most of other minorities know how to continue to keep that dollar within their community. They know how to keep the power of the dollar in their business, and they know how to empower each other in every facet of every way. And this is where, you know, you're talking about some, you know, some things that are just embedded in us. But moving quickly away from the slave quarters, we need to, the few, there are only going to be a few of us who get this. And the few are some of the ones who continue to call in every week and support the coalition and support some of the ways of just trying to get a dialogue of different individuals coming out. A lot of us will, you know, have to move into understanding that if we get these bailout monies for contracting, we cannot turn around and say that we're going to not hire people in our community, because just like you said, the dollar, if I were to hire anybody to pour our concrete, it would all be African-American finishers. I mean, I just have to be honest with you. And that's because down in the South, the finishers that are African-American were one of the better of all finishers throughout the entire country. And everybody was at awe with the type of workmanship and skill level that they had. And that's what we're talking about, is providing a source of bringing back pride within ourselves as business owners, because we have a different value. We have a different value as business owners, as minority business owners. We sustain a double-edged sword, and every time every one of us launch a business, we are trying to help our community, and we're trying to help our bottom line. And a lot of us have felt disenchanted and stopped moving in that capacity. So therefore, we don't have the mentality to try to advance ourselves as business owners in working with people who look like us. And so therefore, you know, everybody keeps talking about what about Main Street? What about Main Street? Well, if the money comes back to Main Street. Okay, who do we have there? Okay. Whoever has that background, please mute your phone.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Caller from 414?
Yes, 414.
Yeah, can you state your name?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Bill Farrell.
Okay, Mr. Farrell, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. Have we got a bad connection? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you really well.
I can't hear you, though.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, we're here. Okay, a little technical difficulty. Muriel, could you tell us about your business and some of the obstacles that you have gotten into when it came down to the, the statement that we were talking about? Okay.
Well, my business is lock and security. And when I started the business in Atlanta back in 1984, I started locksmithing. And I actually started my own business in 88. As a black female, I think I sort of had it from all avenues. And it was like no racial boundaries. Of course, the men were intimidated because, you know, they have a tendency, and this is not putting any male down, but, I mean, from their view, it was like, a female, you can't do this. And I was told that many times by men of color, you can't do this. You won't know how to do it. You're going to mess it up. The actual person that trained me was a white male, and he used to encourage me and tell me that if guys can do it with their egos, and this particular guy was on drugs really bad, and I don't know if that was the reason why he was willing to teach me, because nobody else would have anything to do with him, but he was my source of training because I would pay him. He would go and show me how to do something, and I would pay him. And like I said, I think the greatest thing, one of the biggest blocks for me was just being into a normally male-dominated industry, of course, like the construction. But once I got past that, I think the other part was the education, not knowing, coming from my background. I hadn't finished college, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but a certain amount of self-confidence I didn't have. So once I decided to go back and learn as much as I could, it's like the world opened up, and I would learn, teach myself pretty much, and try and get involved in different organizations. And the one organization that they have for locksmiths is Associated Locksmiths of America, which is pretty much white male dominated, but I would put myself there. I would go there. Sometimes I would be the only black there. Most of the time, the only female there. But I think above everything, like I said before, is the education part, because it helps you get confidence in yourself and your ability to perform. And back to what you were, one of the gentlemen were talking about was the mindsets of people today. After working in the court systems and viewing how the families are, I mean, it's really, there needs to be some kind of cleansing process or educational process of what that the whole community needs to do. When you have black families who bring their kids to court and they introduce their kids into the criminal justice system because their kid is not washing the dishes properly or because the kid is not cleaning their room, I mean, Those are reasons to get my butt whipped when I was younger, but not to take me to court. And that's pretty much where we are. And I think the way people do anything is how they do everything. You know, the way they conduct their household, their social life, like he was talking about with the buying and where we put our money, there's got to be some kind of educational thing that teaches teach our people how to, I don't know, I really don't know what the right words are, but there's got to be something, and maybe this is the cleansing process you're talking about that takes us back to the basics and let us understand what the basics are and how to raise our children and how to conduct ourselves in the community to raise that level of our intellect so that we can hopefully go beyond the bondages that we're in now. But I don't know what the answer is. I just know it needs to happen.
Let me read you something real quick. It's from the Accelerating the Growth of Women Business for Women of Color. In simple terms, it's human capital is what a person brings to a specific situation. His or her attributes or achievement, education, experience, social class, knowledge, skills, personal characteristics, and motivations are all important factors to consider when appraising potential or explaining what is necessary for success. Education is the bedrock for opportunity in the U.S. and is increasingly more important as the country becomes a knowledge economy. Education achievements by gender, race, attract. So it's easy to see whether women, specifically women of color, are making strides. The one thing that I have noticed with you know, women of color, it's not just blacks, it's all women. I mean, people look at, we have to break down one thing. It's like one thing we do is break down that barrier of understanding of, you know, who we may not be. A lot of folks do not feel validated unless they're at the table with a group of white folks, you know, a white men, and they're proud because they're the only one. And I told my mom the reason, that's one reason why I wanted to start a coalition, because I was tired of being the ooh, ah of the job site. Ooh, that's a little woman right there. Ooh, right. Is that a woman? Ah, wow, that is a woman. That's ridiculous when they go home to a woman every night. Well, you would hope so, but still, if they go, you know. And so, therefore, it is, you know, with your experience in locksmithing, yours is no different than it is when Nicole started her business. You know, just not, you know, walking, you know, going against doors against even our own women who, you know, won't set examples for us. I mean, this is where we have to, you know, this is not a social show. This is about understanding what changes have to be made. And it's very simple. If we build networks, social networks, and we build them in a sense that they're durable networks, and when we know each other, communities are stronger, information flows faster, resources can be mobilized more effectively, and problems can be solved more quickly when interdependent environments are present. Our information about this bear direct witness to the current structure of the programs that exist for women. They do not work. They have not worked, and they do not work because the people that are, just like Miriam was saying, when you go to these workshops and different things, the people that are heading those are people who have jobs. They're not successful business owners who have taken the time out of their schedule to go back and reach back into the community. And that is one of the challenges, not just as black people, but for women of color and people of color themselves. We refuse to reach back and help one another for some odd reason. On the last week's show, you would rather, if you're in a Baptist, you're a Baptist church, you would shout and pray with me, and I'll fall out in front of the altar, and they have that prayer, a little vigilant, and people walk around in a circle and pray for you, and they cuss you out in the parking lot once you're done. You know, I mean, there's got to be a defining level of what social networks we can call ourselves sisters and brothers in, or just sisters all together. And I think the coalition is one of the means and the methods of doing so. I probably have coerced the people that have, you know, that have partnered up with us because they know the value. That's so crazy. Can I tell you all something? people like professional women in construction, the unions, everybody sees our value except for us. Isn't that funny? I can go to the table and, oh, my God, it's like a saving grace. Thank God you were here. Thank God you came to the door. If your organization could just really work with us, they need us. We have to define the fact that we are at the head of the table. We are at the table. People, open up your eyes and say, oh, wow, I'm really sitting here because I'm at the head of the table, not because somebody invited you. We are at the head of the table. We only have 4 good years to eat. So I encourage everybody to to change the way they think, because that's power. Your thinking and your thinking is power. You can speak life into your situation, and you can speak death into your situation. You have to keep yourselves in a powerful position so that you know that you have the ability to do anything that you want to do. I mean, that's my thing in a nutshell. We have to define ourselves in a different way. We have, you know, everything that happened then, we can't hold on to it. You know, we got to let some things go.
Well, Ms. Ali, we do have over 25 years of talking with black businesses, black business owners. I've heard just about everything that you can think of about what are some of the reasons and excuses we make for not dealing with each other on every level, including gender, as well as color. And there are problems that we need to exorcise out of our communities. We still, if we cannot get over putting a premium on skin tone and hair texture, it's going to be hard for us to see why we need to come together and deal with each other to generate economic redevelopment amongst ourselves, or economic empowerment amongst ourselves. So we've been scratching the surface. The reason I threw that out there, the amount of gold that's there in the black community, you're right, everybody sees it but us. If you imagine how hard it would be for you if you were to only exist on 5% of what you make, of what your annual income is, if you only had access to 5% of it, what would it do to your lifestyle? It'd be kind of hard in some cases, not unless you make a lot of money. We have been basically going along the way we've gone for decades, generations in this economy, in this country. And if we were to see that if we were to be able to utilize what we have amongst ourselves on a greater degree, if we're doing this on 5%, what would we be like as a community if we were up to 10-25% of utilizing our own resources and recirculating amongst ourselves? We'd be awesome. And that's why I'm saying, looking at how much money that's out there in the community, the private sector, amongst the black community as a whole, I think you'd be surprised to find out what can be done, even as bad as the economy is, how much discretionary spending there is out there in the black community for people who need the services that you have to offer, even on large scales.
You know what? I agree. I have never, the mall is more packed than it ever has been. I don't know, Miriam, is the court systems as packed as well?
That's probably the one industry that never slows down. It's growing every day.
And this is the thing that's in a nutshell. One of the things that was interesting that we were talking about was, I think when Suno did her presentation, the other gentleman that was sitting on the panel was literally like he was upset because she was able to do what she needed to do without the normal mythology of working to get her to meet her goals on her project. And so a lot of us become, I don't know if it was, I don't know what this guy, remember this guy, he had really had a bad attitude.
Yeah.
I guess that's why I had to say something to him, because I'm like, she built her social network, you know, and she has a human capital network, which gave her a financial capital network in the end. So, you know, that I think that is one of these are some of the barriers. We are probably our own worst enemies, and I thank God that we're not trying to work within, like, these most, you know, in on a say regional level, a lot of our contacts are from all over the rest of the country, and they're excited about the coalition. They're excited about us bringing some of our programs and some of our structure to the table because they don't know. Georgia is one of the most blessed states in the union when it comes to Afro-Americans and being able to have opportunity. I have a caller from 111. Hello? Hello? Okay. That keeps coming up. I'll just hang that up. Let's try to include everybody on this thing. So, but there was a guy, and I thought I might not mention this, but I might as well. He was a speaker for the DeKalb County Purchasing and Business Expo or whatever. He was the keynote speaker, and he stood up, I think it was 2 years ago. He's a renowned, he has a bunch of books and motivational speaker, and I don't remember his name, but he told the crowd, there was prestigious individuals there from all over DeKalb County and Fulton County and Gwinnett County, just all over it came. You know, the place for like $75 a plate or whatever. I didn't pay for it, but anyway. so he said, I wanted to speak to you all because he said, the Lord came to me in my sleep last night and he told me to tell y'all something. And everybody kind of sat up toward the front of their chairs. He said, God told me to tell y'all, you niggas ain't getting nothing else. And the whole crowd went, whoo, what'd he say? He said, that's right. He said, the Lord told me to tell y'all that you niggas ain't getting nothing else in Georgia. He said, do you know how much money y'all spend right here in Georgia? Do you know that you all are the economic impulse of the entire country? You set the pace for industry, trends, music, arts, everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He said, but what have you done to reach into the rest of the world to improve everybody else's lives? And I said, ooh, I like him. And if you go into Ohio, in Columbus and Cleveland, they have kids running around like savages, beating up the police, taking their police cars. Mm-hmm. They have millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of monies that they allocate for programs like the Akron Urban League with somebody that we were trying to work with. They got about $1 million to do a women in construction program. And instead of them seeking out a sustainable organization to help them with their program and to find other resources in order to attract those individuals to the program, they put out stuff, flyers in the supermarket in a couple places, and then told the state, oh, we can't find anybody for the program, so we're going to allocate the funds for something else. And this is the Akron Urban League in Cleveland and Ohio. And this is what's been happening. This is not just from a individual. This is government agencies who have individuals who sit and go to all the different no meetings and shake hands with the right people and get funds for their own community and rape their own community. Also, there's a program in Ohio called the MCAP program. It's existed for 30 years. 30 years, this program has had millions of dollars funneled into it. The head blacks that are in charge of that MCAP program, their sons are now in charge of it. Not one contractor has went through that program, has successfully been able to become bonded. In 30 years, they have companies that have been in business 40 years and still don't have the effectiveness to get bonded because the folks who are in charge of the money are some black men and women who refuse to change the game. You have folks who are sitting at the heads of table that look like us, but they're not a part of us. So therefore, this is, and the folks who are feeding the money, they know, just like the lady said, one sister from California, Destiny Muhammad, said that they know that we're only going to go so far. That's why everybody was stunned that 97% of us turned out to vote. It was something that had never been done because they said we will never come together. We need to fool them. That's what we need to do. We need to fool them in every kind of way now. We need to fool them the now that they are the minorities, but they still have the majority of the capital. You know, they have the money, just like you said. They have the money. They control the money. They control the economic pulse of our own communities and how those monies are streamlined in it, and they put their own gatekeepers. They know that these individuals are not going to give you the information. They know that you're not going to be allowed an understanding of what has to be developed in order to be a part of the bigger picture. They understand that these guys are going to make a $250,000 a year, $300,000 a year that sits on boards. Even here in Atlanta, you have these huge boards of directors of all African-American influential individuals, but they have programs that only impact five people. DOT's got a program right now, and only five people is going to get all the money from that program from FAA. Five people. And you got all these certified DOT firms, only five they're going to adapt. But the money's for everybody. So therefore, there's nobody advocating, there's nobody even mentioning the lack of information that's not being drawn to the rest of the masses as community. So therefore, we have to look at things in a different manner. We have to change, we have to have policy reform. And those policy reforms should state that everybody gets a piece of the pie. It's just like this bailout money. Everybody, you know, I think somebody mentioned, I think Ms. Hearns mentioned that every household should get, you know, if every household got, I don't know, $100,000 in America, the economy would be bailed out, or $200,000, whatever the case may be. That's a bailout. That bails out everybody. You know, General Motors. They're going to bail out General Motors, but are you going to bail out, you know, the smaller businesses that create those jobs, that create those, that multiplier that you were talking about, Mr. Reed? Are they going to do that? They're not. And then if they did do it, it's only going to go to the same people who are the head, I call it the gatekeepers, at the door. So it's not even about the mentality of the individuals, you know, as individuals. It's just the mentality of the folks who are a part of a system that is internalized with an infrastructure that has been part of, I say, you know, 400 years of repression and all. You know, they say we're in a recession, we're in a repression. We're repressing ourselves through a lot of stuff. You know, I try to let a lot of people, you know, talk about a lot of different things on the show, and I do want to make sure that I keep everybody included. I can talk probably through the whole hour and a half by myself and just kind of keep rambling until I'm finished. But I do want to, you know, stress to people that we continue to try to support this level of a show based on the points that are very important. You must mention the not just the disparity, but you have to, you know, this is a show for whistleblowing. People want to be, you know, sensitive. Well, I don't want to talk about Joe Jackson having four jobs, you know, but they you know, he makes $400,000 a year with all his different little nonprofits and all the stuff he does. It all comes from the federal government. Nobody wants to mention that, you know. He's done such a wonderful job. Well, you know, that's great, but who makes $500,000 in a part of a recession? We have to really speak the truth about what's happening in our community. And a lot of times, you know, Mary, you were talking about the folks who are sitting at the table, at that table. You know, you had a banker. He was kind of like really just, I don't know, just I don't think he had any clue about what was going on. He still wanted to process Suno like she was somebody that didn't have a line of credit, you know? I mean, this woman has a huge line of credit, and he's sitting there being combative with her because she's a woman of color. And I think if it was somebody else differently, it'd be different. Wouldn't you think so?
I agree.
You know, anybody that can prove that they can become a viable resource in our community, she's not even from here, right? She's
Korea, yeah.
She's from Korea, and she came here, been here. How long has she been here?
Probably 20-some years.
20-some years, and has the type of resources that she has, and this banker just refused to even acknowledge that somebody could, you know, turn out to have that kind of power in our own community. She's not doing it in the Asian community. She's right there in the heart of the Black community, right?
And she's encouraging other Asians to come to the area because a lot of them have businesses there, and she tells them that it makes no sense that you would have a business here and then you drive to Doraville or Buckhead or wherever it is they live, where your home is. Why don't you spend the money here where your business is and live here so you can have a voice in what goes on here? And she has encouraged a few to move there.
Okay. And with your business being right there in the heart of, you're at Campbellton Road, right?
Yes.
Okay. With your business being right there, did it improve your exposure, or what has it done with you being an urban business owner? Has that improved your exposure, or has it hindered you?
I think it has improved it tremendously. With our business, and our business has been on Campbellton Road since 1990,
mm-hmm.
And because we were there, we got an opportunity to know. In fact, the building that we're in now, when we purchased it back in 2003, I believe,
mm-hmm.
It was an Asian person who owned it, and it was so run down he couldn't get anyone else to buy it. Because we were there, we saw it all the time, we were willing to take a chance. And he was a pleasant guy. He owner financed it for us because there was so much repairs, no mortgage company was going to touch it. And then when we finally was able to get the financing to redo it, my husband said, we're not going to leave Campbellton Road. I mean, this is where the money is. And with all the years we've been there, it feels great for a customer to walk in and say, I'm glad y'all are still here. I'm glad you improved the property to the point where it's actually not an eyesore anymore. It's something nice on Campbellton Road. And the vision is that with the TAD money that's coming in the area, that more people will come in and buy property there and seek to improve it. The money's available with the city. It's just all the paperwork you have to go through to get it done. And that's one of the benefits of the class, is that not necessarily coming from the instructors there, but the other people that I've met and the things that they're doing in the inner city,
mm-hmm.
The education I've gotten from them, the knowledge on how to put a package together to be able to get financing to improve the property, you know, that's a great benefit. So I think it's been a real benefit being there.
And you guys are hub zone too, right?
No, no. Actually, we're 1 mile out.
Wow.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you employ folks that's right there in the community.
Yes.
So
yes.
And thus ends the research right there. And it was easier for you. Have these folks been with you the whole time that you guys been there, or?
Well, one of them has. We've had lots of employees over the years. Some of them we train, and they go on and they open their business. And I'm glad. I mean, you know, when we see them, I'm glad they're doing well, because in the security business, there's enough for everyone. It's not that you need to hover over what you have. There's enough there for everyone if you're willing to go after it. So we've had a lot of people over the years. We have got one guy that's there. He's probably been with us about 4 or 5 years. Before that, like I said, we would have someone who worked in the shop in the years that I was in school. But for the most part, it was just my husband and I running the business. I would run the shop operation, and he would run the outside calls. And up to the last 5, 6 years is when we actually had full-time employees.
Okay, and that has allowed you guys to be proud of what you guys are. And so therefore, with that pride, you don't have a problem with other folks, you know, taking off and starting their own business.
No, not at all.
And that's the answer right there, Mr. Reed. When folks have it feels good when you know that a person that used to work for you is not your competitor, but it's somebody that you now, this person is going to pull in maybe one other person, so that's going to create another job. It's going to be maybe, it's going to be exponential growth with employing these individuals, you know, in that type of way, and then them turning around and each one teach one. My mom always says that if you continue to feed a person, all they'll do is just continue to eat. But if you teach a person how to fish, you can feed them. They can feed themselves for a lifetime. Thus, you know, makes it a very lucrative situation for you, because you and your husband can in fact turn around and then sub out all your work to those individuals if you keep doing it the right way.
And we do that a lot, Karima. In fact, one of my visions is in the lock and key industry. There's all the large manufacturers are, of course, all white-owned businesses. And one of our visions is to set up a factory somewhere in Georgia, in one of the little small towns that the economy is not so great. And I'm told that the state has monies to help do that. So that's what I'm doing now, researching that, so that we can offer jobs to people, especially people of color that want to come in and learn the trade, learning how to make the key, the security hardware, to actually going out in the community to open up in different areas, open up their own little business, you know, and to doing that globally, you know, eventually, so that it can be that same philosophy, each one teach one.
Exactly. And that's a theory that makes sense to me, because it turns out a different type of better person. You know, your belief is a principle that people should live by, pretty much. You know, you hear women, a lot of women say, why should I work with you? You're my competition. How can I be your competition when it's nothing but me and you sitting at the table? So I think we kind of hit it on the nail with that. And in terms of the business, you got the Hub Zone, you have the 8A certification as well.
Yes.
So you have a lot of competitors in business as far as the federal level is concerned?
Actually, when we went to the, I guess it's Georgia Tech, the GTEC thing, GPAC, actually they did the search on the CCR. There's actually no other locksmith businesses that's 8A certified, in Georgia anyway. And that was one of my questions at the seminar. I don't know if you were there, but then why are we not getting more business? And I'm just not looking in the right place, because what happens is it's normally a good old boy industry. So what it is, they pick up the phone and they call the people that they
sole source it, because
exactly.
They don't know you exist.
Yeah, but I'm working to change that.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. If you cannot be measured, then you do not exist. So a lot of people do not understand that you have to put a lot of your business dollars into real marketing, guerrilla marketing and branding. Branding yourselves and meeting contracting officers, this, that, and the other. But this is the other thing. You know, that's the same thing with just what we were talking about. Our personification to the world now is a little bit different in some sense of the word. But just look at this whole situation with the fact that You're in a lucrative business, and you have you're the only one that's in the CCR registration that's in Georgia, and look at where your business is growing in terms of just projecting yourself, you know, the growth. If somebody were to look at your business and project it where you should be at, you know, they'll give you a better value because you're a husband and wife team. Your husband still works with you in the business, right?
Right.
So therefore, but if you were a single woman in the business, you'd have a different scale. You know, there'd be a different tool of measurement for you, unfortunately. And
I know. In fact, when I go in to do the certification,
mm-hmm.
and they know that my husband works in the business, they think that I'm a front. They don't, and I tell them that I taught him.
Mm-hmm.
He came in after I started the business, and I taught him. Nobody believes that, but it's okay.
Well, I tell you, it's one of the things that that my mom went through, I guess, when we were in business. Is that right, Ms. Freeman?
Yes.
Okay. And they would say, well, where are your finishers at? Betty and I right there. Those are two girls. She said, that's all I need. That was it. So, and even when we were general contracting back in Indiana, you know, my sister has the background in electrical, mechanical, and plumbing, and drywall. My mom has it too, so, but still. But she retired from the
heating,
post office.
Heating. Air conditioning.
Heating and air conditioning. And she has a boiler license.
If there's a
license out there, you guys, that can be gotten, this one has it. Trust me. This is a professional college student.
I'm good at it.
Right. But Muriel, I appreciate you finally coming aboard and giving us a call. Do you have a website that you want to let everybody know about?
Yes, it's abudgetlockanddoor.com, and Ann is spelled out. We have this wonderful guy who just came aboard about 6 months ago to work with us, and he's great with website building. I mean, it's amazing. It looks so professional. I was shocked, but he's done a great job on the website. And I want to say, Karima, what you're doing is great. It reminds me of this book. My favorite book is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And in his book, he has a mastermind group, and he encourages everyone to get a mastermind group of people like mine that come together. And you just, if somebody has a problem, they bring it to the table, and everybody puts their mind together to try and work out a solution. I mean, this is much like what you're doing, and it's great.
And thank you. I appreciate that. And can we get a telephone number for you as well?
Yes. It's 404-753-3355. That's our shop number.
Okay. And, Mr. Reed, do you have a website?
No. Basically, we had discontinued the Black Pages, but there's some things that we're going to be doing with my associates, Mr. Ken Reed, and also Mr. Marion Harden, that we do plan to work with CJ Heron Construction to implement some of the things we talked about tonight in terms of a campaign that can change and redirect our thinking of how we deal with each other and how we support each other. And I think we can do it. And you have an excellent network to do this with.
Okay. And you have an email address that people can contact you at?
Yes. You can contact me at blackpages_Leroy@yahoo.com.
Okay. And Ms. Freeman, you have a site that folks can visit for your health and wellness. Could you go over that real quick?
Yes. It's youpreventbiz, the letter U, preventbiz.com.
Okay. And Ms. Bowens, do you have a website that you want to tell everybody about? Ms. Bowens? Janor?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I don't have one at this moment.
Oh, I thought it was CECIservices.com.
Oh. Okay.
Yes, it is.
That one. Yes,
okay.
It is.
There you go, CECIServices.com. Okay. All right. And the one thing I wanted to, we have about 5 minutes left in the show. I want to thank everybody. A lot of people say, well, you know, 90 minutes on the show. Isn't that pretty long? And it really goes really fast. I think to share, I want everybody to please go to our site and understand that some of the things that we're, everything that we're doing for the coalition, these resources at this stage are just open to folks who want to come in and provide, and you know, be able to provide some help to get some help. The only way that you can be a part of the coalition is that you're going to roll up your sleeve and provide something, you know, viable. We're, you know, even if you think you don't have anything to offer, you can offer your time, you can offer resources, you can offer any of that. Time is very valuable, so that's a big thing. There's a caller from 1111111. Is there another caller on the line? Caller?
Okay.
That's weird. That keeps happening.
Guess not.
I'm sorry?
I said guess not.
Okay, so we'll just let that one go. But please go to our site at ncwcc.org and also go over our blogs. We have a building capacity blog. Of course, you know, we have the blogtalkradio.com, ncwcc/, and we also have a YouTube in place that you'll start seeing podcasts of a lot of different things that we're doing. And one of the upcoming events that we're trying to be a part of is for the point of entry for the coalition that's going to be co-sponsored by some of the AGC contractors in the union. And so what that's going to do, we're going to have a workshop each month in understanding and defining how to work with the union contractors and the contracts. So we did a lot of negotiation with the union, some things that they offered that they would have never offered anybody else as a group. One of those is that we have an exclusivity agreement with the subcontractors. We'll just say, for instance, if we are subbing, if you have a project and you need to have a subcontractor, they have, you know, extended their subcontractor base so that all we have to do is pick up the phone and identify one of their subcontractors that could do work with us on our projects as well. And therefore, that would free up some of our capital as business owners, because subcontractors do labor, equipment, and material. And that's very crucial in this day and age, because if you're a startup company, you don't have the line of credit to get some of the material that normal people that's been working in the industry for a while to get. And that's a little strategy that I will throw out there for you. But we'll be doing workshops each month, starting in January, at the location off of Bankhead Highway. And I want to just tell everybody, we have 1 week now left in this year, and I want to thank everybody for calling in and being supportive. It's been a blessing to be able to have a platform finally for women of color. People are asking me how to get on and get their own show, and I if you call me, I will help you all set up your shows. It's pretty simple, but if you need any assistance, please let us know. It is very important that we continue to create other affinity organizations so that we will no longer be alone. It's something that we must do, is that we must be a good steward. And it says that, moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. That's 1 Corinthians 4:2. And I want to thank all the time God and my mother for supporting us and being the hammer and the nail that keeps us going. And I want to thank our executive director, Janora Boynes out of Minnesota, for continuing to support us. And I want to thank everybody again, and we will see you guys next week. Thank you.
Good night. Good night.
I'm here.